This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napp.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and sadly, after I'm done saying I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, you will not hear I'm Jennifer Landa. Jennifer is taking a break. She is on a vacation with her family, and we wish her lots of exciting, fun times and can't wait to hear about it when she gets back. So I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
Hey, you know what? That's enough. That's good enough. That's good enough. We await Jennifer's return. So happy to have her part of the news team again. But you and I covering it old school. Well, actually, not old school. Jennifer's old school. We're covering it early pandemic old school, I guess.
Middle school.
We are going to get into all the Star Wars news, breaking news from a long time ago, and we will dive into Andor, some award nominations, a lot of things on the way. As always, I want to remind you first that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have our Four Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Before we get to the news, it's a chance to catch up, and truly a chance to catch up. Joseph was traveling around the lands here recently. So, sir, how are you, and where did Star Wars find you?
Oh, wow. This is really fun to have our Life in Star Wars Adventure talks, because sometimes it's like, I've just been doing the normal stuff. And hey, I saw somebody with a Star Wars T-shirt, and that's always fun and good. But this week was one of those massive weeks of both Life Adventure and Star Wars Adventure. Trying to keep it short, when my wife and I moved from Minneapolis to Los Angeles about 8 years ago, we were lucky enough to own a house, which we had filled with stuff that would not fit into a small apartment in Los Angeles. So we just got a storage space in Minneapolis, and we put a lot of stuff in there. And we finally decided, hey, it's time to move that stuff from Minneapolis to Los Angeles, which is just very actually difficult to do.
That's daunting. Oh,
it really is. We have a new storage space in Los Angeles. We flew back to Minneapolis. When we were putting the things in the storage space in Minneapolis, we boxed up a lot of it. But then other stuff was just like, literally when you opened the storage space, the first thing you saw was a table with a typewriter on it and the Imperial shuttle, the Kenner one from the 80s. And then I think a bunch of just like yarn and fabric of my wife's. Sitting on top of that, five lightsabers from the prequels, the toys. So it's just like stuff. There's a lot that was floating. So we had to go there. We had to like just pack everything up really quickly so it could be ready to be moved across country. And in this adventure, I discovered that there was a bunch of stuff, a bunch of figures and toys that I forgot I owned. I didn't even open all the boxes. I just had to open a couple of the ones that were like way too fragile to ship. And I opened this one box, and staring at me was an Obi-Wan Kenobi figure that I've been looking at on eBay. And I was like, thank goodness. before the vintage collection was even like officially the vintage collection, when it was just like, we're doing this as a special thing. I can't remember what year. It was just like a few of the main figures. It's a what is now the vintage collection, you know, original card of Obi-Wan Kenobi from the first Star Wars film where he's got the yellow lightsaber. Right. And that was the figure I'd been looking at. And I think I must have been gifted them for like birthdays or whatever in 2002, 20 years ago, because I don't remember buying them. Ken, I have a big Dooku and a big Mace Windu, the 12-inch like the 12-inch dolls. Yeah, I have a 12-inch Dooku that I didn't know I owned.
Oh, that's amazing. That's like the Force works in mysterious ways. First of all, with that Kenobi thing, you're like, oh, save me the money. But that's fascinating.
Yeah. And then I found, I did a TikTok of it. I found another loose Dooku, like the main Dooku from the Attack of the Clones line, which I had just picked up in the package at Star Wars Celebration. And I didn't remember I owned him loose.
That's, yeah, you got to keep track of your loose Dookus, everybody.
Yeah, big Dookus, loose Dookus, I got them all, and they're coming with me to Los Angeles here soon. So that was really great. I also had always carried my original Kenner figures in the carrying cases, the Vader carrying case and the 3PO carrying case. Ooh, yeah. And they were, when I moved, when I lived in Minnesota, they would just be like the first or the last thing I would move. And I would like gently carry them in my car, and I would like put a seatbelt on them. Like, yeah. And they're like, I can't move them like this. So I finally bought those little plastic action figure containers that you can get for each individual action figure. That was also a trip to go through. And I emotionally prepared, like Walrus Man's head is going to fall off one of these days when I pick him up. Walrus Man, his limbs are so loose, he cannot stand. It's like been drugged. There's no way. So the whole process was just this like tour of my life from all these different times, Star Wars from all these different eras. So it was a great time to reflect and also to just kind of celebrate all the different times and ways that Star Wars has been with me.
Yeah, no, it's a roadmap to your heart.
It really is. It really is. And then the kind of the button to this adventure. I bought some more action figures.
Of course.
At Target. Anyway, because I had to buy a Target. I'm in Minneapolis. I have to relive my past by buying an action figure. But we also bopped down to Iowa for a friend of Sarah. Sarah had a book reading. It was wonderful. We had a chance to meet a 10-year-old child who was introduced. I was introduced to the child as, this guy talks about Star Wars on a podcast all the time. And this 10-year-old really liked Star Wars.
Oh,
and
that's great.
It was just so gratifying because it was the, like, who's your favorite, what do you like kind of conversation. And this 10-year-old kid is just like, I like all the movies. They're all good. I just watched Obi-Wan and I like that. I'm on season 4 of Clone Wars. I enjoy it. It was just that great big step back, and it was so refreshing to just be like, yes.
That's amazing.
They're just enjoyable, you know.
I believe the Star Wars children are our future.
Exactly. Oh, so that was it. Ended my adventure. Ended with hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Hope is sometimes all you need when it comes to Star Wars collecting or boxing up and moving a Star Wars collection. You need a lot of hope to get through that too.
Exactly. So that's it. I'm curious about your adventures.
You know, busy doing some work, trying to get some stuff going, getting ready for. Well, actually, I can't say I'm not actually going to Comic-Con. So I will just be in San Diego. I'm doing a comedy show at the American Comedy Company on Thursday night. And then Grace and I are just going to have a little mini getaway and probably drink and party in downtown San Diego. But no badge, no panels, no nothing, which is kind of refreshing. So actually, I want to shout out like our longtime listener, Shayla Durnlew, who actually wrote me. He was like, hey, you guys doing a meetup at Comic-Con? I was like, good question. We actually won't be there. So looking forward to that. So it was kind of focused on that. But we did get a chance to go out to the Pantages Theater in Heart of Hollywood there. Great venue. A lot of history there. I had only been there once previous in my career. My career in L.A. In my life in L.A. That's a lot about life in L.A. You think of career before your life. And I'd seen Steve Martin perform there once with his Bluegrass band and show and everything. It's great. But so we saw Moulin Rouge. And of course, you know, online, I have to make an Obi-Wan and Satine joke. I mean, it's just a prerequisite. But yeah, a lot of fun. And you know, no direct Star Wars to it. But I am a fan of the movie. And it is it got me thinking that that movie's over 20 years old now. And how awesome it is that we have Ewan McGregor getting to be Obi-Wan Kenobi some 20 years or so later from the last time he had worn those robes. And I was sitting there enjoying the music. They've added a lot of new music because the movie again came out in 2001. So now we have a lot of Lord, Gaga, Beyonce in the show. And it's great. And it's fun. And you're tapping your toe and singing along when you can under your breath. I wasn't singing loud. but then I was just, I was thinking of Kenobi. And what a pleasure it was. What a joy it was to get this series all these years later. And Ewan McGregor being such a wonderful performer. And at the range, you know, at the time he's Kenobi, he's singing in Moulin Rouge. He's also in a great little movie I love called Little Voice with Jim Broadbent and others. Came out in 99, 2000 range. So it was a little reflection on the talents of Obi-Wan Kenobi himself.
Oh, that is really, really great. I remember, you know, I had friends who were so into Moulin Rouge and I really enjoyed the film. But, you know, some friends who are really into tragic romance.
Yes.
Tragic romance is my Star Wars. And just being, I think Ewan McGregor kind of being so curious and trying different things is one of the things that has always made me enjoy his performance as Obi-Wan Kenobi, because I think all that sort of life perspective filters into the character. So I think that's great that you can go see a musical that Ewan McGregor isn't even in live, and it still makes you think of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It is. And you know, the final note on that, you said some great stuff on McGregor there, because it's like, and he's said it a lot in interviews lately in the promotion of Kenobi of, it's kind of crazy, you know, I'm paraphrasing him, of course, but it's kind of crazy I've been Star Wars, because at the time I was like, an indie actor. I was, you know, I going into a big franchise doing Star Wars. I loved it, but I don't know. It was kind of a brave or weird choice for him. And so it is a reminder. We truly got this wonderful performer, but at the time, I mean, Trainspotting, I think his name was so in our minds, but it is still kind of a little bit of a left field pick at the time and a big one. And all that Rick McCallum gum chewing joy over casting, it was worth it.
It really was. And we look forward to, you know, the announcement of possibly more Kenobi or celebrating the Kenobi we've got.
Yes. So there you have it, Star Wars in our lives, our Star Wars in life adventures. But now let's get to some news. And look, as always, there's a lot of stories out there. Some are rumors, and we're just not going to play around in the rumor muck and mire. We'll wait till it's stories are official, but there's some tantalizing cool stories out there. We won't acknowledge that, but focus on what we're going to talk about here today. And it is a countdown to Andor, a new interview, which was actually recorded at Star Wars Celebration. mine's on the convention in front of me. New interview provides just more insight into what's coming our way. Diego Luna, Genevieve O'Reilly, and executive producer Sanae Wollenberg sat down with Entertainment Weekly at Star Wars Celebration, and here are some of the highlights. And I will say, there's a lot of highlights, and I'm leaving a lot on the cutting room floor. So, Joseph, pull in anything. There was a full kind of podcast, and then there was about a 7-minute video. So we're pulling from that there. Let's start here. Diego Luna said a little bit into the interview, but he said, behind everyone that has brought change, there's a story. There's a reason. And I just love that we have 12 episodes to tell you that story. It's about learning that your strength and powers is in your numbers. There's people out there that think like you and they worry like you do about what matters to you. Star Wars is always like that. It's always telling messages that have a lot to do with what we're living. Goes on to say there is a need to get involved, be part of things, not to witness from afar, to get your hands dirty. So, Joseph, I say to you, how does that hit you as a pitch for Andor?
It's so powerful because in some ways it is really the absolute beating heart of Star Wars, right? Like everything that he's describing. But it is so focusing on this specific message and element of Star Wars that it feels fresh and new. In the past, you know, we've talked about the sort of DNA of A New Hope in particular. You can almost like see these different elements of Star Wars in the big three, right? Like Luke is the Jedi and the Force. Han is the rogues and the bounty hunters, and Leia is the politics and the rebellion and the leadership, right? And it feels like this series Andor is really following that Leia thread, right? Absolute heart of the big political story of Star Wars, and what is the truth of individual people within these large political stories. So in one way, it's like totally absolute foundational Star Wars storytelling, but by so laser focusing on it, it sounds like right now a lot of the other sort of great stuff about Star Wars kind of stripped away so that you can focus on this element. It makes it feel really exciting and new, you know? So I think that's where my mind goes right away at first. I want to pause there because I'm curious. I have some other thoughts, but I want to hear what you have to say.
No, I love it. In a way, like none of the comments and quotes we're pulling from this interview were like shockers to me. And what I mean by that is like, I think we've all kind of looked at this Andor series to hit these kind of notes following with what Rogue One did, but that being the end of the journey and how we get there being so important. But just to hear Andor himself, Diego Luna, kind of focus on this idea that it's truly the people behind this great change. And that's where the story is. It is a character journey. And so I think that's what's going to give it so much meat. It isn't just, oh, this is Star Wars politics. Oh, this is Star Wars rebellion. It is the people in that and the choices they have to make, the risks, the losses. It sounds like I'm in some vague screenwriting teachers conference, you know, hitting all these character beats. But I think it's really, for me as a Star Wars fan, it's what I want. And it can be space wizards fighting with laser swords. It can be little Grogu's and Porgs and all these kind of wonderful corners that we celebrate. But at the end of the day, we always want to go back to the characters and how that applies and affects our own lives. I mean, that's what we talk a lot about here in Force Center, especially over the last 2-3 years. And when we really start diving into the themes, it's what's in this story and what's in the story for us. And Diego Luna is just like, it's like, he's a very calm, cool, collected guy, but you can just see there's this excitement that I thought I was done and I get to go back and we get to tell these individual stories inside this giant space opera and this political drama, the spy thrill, all those kind of things. And that just got me even more geeked up for it.
Yeah, I think the fact that there's such clarity on what the show is truly about, what is the big picture idea of the show, and how do the individual journeys of characters tell that story, it makes me excited for the show because it just sounds like everybody's on the same page. They really know what this is about. They really know the story that they're telling. I think a couple things for me that also excite me about it is, you know, Rogue One definitely has, it's still Star Wars, it's still space fantasy, but it's a little bit more gritty and grounded and brutal. Mm-hmm. And the Andor trailer looks that way. And a lot of times when we grew up, Ken, with gritty, mm-hmm. grounded and brutal, sometimes the actual message behind that was not particularly inspiring. But yeah, it's great to know that this show is probably going to be gritty, grounded, brutal, but all in the service of moving the characters away from cynicism or nihilism to hope, to taking action. And I think that's what's really inspiring about it. I've always loved, and I know I'm not alone, the Rogue One quote from Andor, if I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old. Mm. And the way he says that in Rogue One always kind of made me feel like he has his heart and soul has been in this fight since he was 6 years old. But knowing that this first season is the journey to him becoming willing to do something,
right,
that to me really speaks to, this is a journey where Cassian realizes that the entire reality of his life is being upended by political realities, by violence and war and authoritarianism. And the fact that we have 12 episodes that focus on him choosing to do something about it gets to this really real world thing, right? Where we learn history, and sometimes it just seems like, well, yeah, of course, if I was there when this tragedy was happening, I would get up and fight. And then the reality is, it's really hard to acknowledge that things are that bad. It's really hard to risk your life, your soul, even your time or your money doing something about it. So the fact that this is a story about maybe Cassian reframing his own life narrative in his head from, yep, I've experienced tragedy everywhere I've gone in life since I was 6 years old. That's just the way of things. What am I supposed to do about it? Take care of myself.
Yeah.
To, oh, this is not just the way it is. This is something that maybe I can do something about. That's really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a way, you know, we're going to see what the series delivers to us, but the stuff you said about Rogue One and the fight to the push away from cynicism. I mean, that is a darker war film, right? It is definitely, you know, the Scarif battle is pew, 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 Star Wars cool, but it is as gritty as we've gotten in Star Wars in a lot of ways, not counting, you know, a lightsaber fight on the shores of Mustafar, I guess. Mm-hmm. But man, that movie ends with tears of joy and hope for me, you know, like it pushes towards that. And this show being people deciding to fight for the idea of hope, as silly as that may seem, right? As simple and naive as that may seem, and have that kind of spill out into our lives. And it always does. I think no matter what era you discover Star Wars in, this kind of storytelling is there for you to connect with. That's why I think it's so powerful. It's why we talk about going to storage sheds and pulling out figures. And it's not just because we do think Mace and Dooku are cool, but it's there's stories there that affect us daily if you're open to it. And I think this series is going to be an important chapter in that ongoing storytelling of Star Wars.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one of the other direct quotes that I wanted to comment on is Diego Luna saying, it's about learning that your strength and power is in your numbers. This is such a huge Star Wars theme, right? Boss Nass and Andor and Zori Bliss are all shaking hands on this, right? So many characters. It's such a big Star Wars theme of like, it's not just the one person alone. It's everybody acting together can really make a difference. And when you just say it that way, it sounds like, oh, thanks. Yeah, I had that motivational poster in my college dorm room. Great. It's easy to kind of just dismiss as just a simple, yes, we all work together, everything will be better. But the reality is it is a simple thing, I think, that is very, very hard to do. And it's hard to get people to believe in and to trust into this idea that we're going to have a long series focusing on that. My mind really went to just kind of a real world political place. We've talked about this show looks like it's going to be pretty blatantly political, and it might invite a little bit more blatant political discussion from us. But I was having a conversation with a friend this weekend about the history of voter turnout in America for presidential elections. And like, according to Wikipedia, in 2016, the voter turnout for the presidential election was 59.2% of eligible voters. And in 2020, which was record, absolutely mind-boggling, 66.9%. Now, of course, a lot of that is about access, right? Yeah. Or help to get the ballot, or people trying to block access to the ballot. But it's also, to me, about the battle between nihilism, cynicism, and hope. And it, for me, it's just really powerful when you look at it of like, this is what's being talked about in this show, like Diego Luna is saying, it applies to our choices now. Do we fall into cynicism and say, this is just the way things are, and what are you going to do about it? Or I can't do anything, or it's not my problem. Or do you engage and have that hope of like, yep, I'm just one person, but I am one person among many willing to do something.
And connecting with the larger group. And in my short, summarizing all of this, it seems like Andor is saying, don't tweet it, do it.
I really hope that that's a literal line. Don't just put your feelings on the HoloNet. Do something about it.
Do it. And it's all complicated. And this is going to all be wonderfully Star Wars. This is going to be wonderful Star Wars, without a doubt. And we're going to talk about some of the importance of it here, but I'll just say this, like, so even just as a Star Wars fan, someone who grew up with this rebellion, to really build back to it is still some of the more fascinating parts of this galaxy for me. And I know a couple of people out there I've talked to recently love this era. Actually, I was at my comic shop picking up a large stack of Star Wars comics after read it. And Chris, the manager at Earth 2 Sherman Oaks, is like, man, I that Andor trailer was my favorite thing because I just love the story of the rebellion. Love the story of the rebellion. And so to actually dig in on that even more, obviously I almost feel like I'm repeating myself, but this is why I'm excited and why these comments kind of got me jazzed up again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because the original trilogy, it is easy to just watch like, oh, wow, well, the Empire is really bad. And look at all these cool, brave people doing it. But to see them have to make these choices and, great stuff.
And let's talk about the importance of getting this story as Star Wars fans and as humans. All right, whatever, however you want to look at it. Genevieve O'Reilly talked about Mon Mothma. Great stuff about Mothma and her coming back to the role, or continuing the role, I should say. And she says, Mothma, over the previous appearances, Mothma's more of a pillar in previous storytelling, a statue even. She uses the phrase statue. And now we'll get to learn more about, as she says, the woman behind the gown. So what does that mean to the Star Wars story that we finally get to spend some quality time with someone so key to the rebellion? And I will say this, we acknowledge that there's some great stuff with her in Rebels, including her wonderful speech. But I actually agree with Genevieve O'Reilly. You're not in her journals. And you're not really hearing the exact, choice that she had to make about, well, I probably have a pension, I have a nice office, I could just be quiet, and no, I'm not going to do that. And this is that story. So, Joseph, I kick it to you. What does that mean to you as a Star Wars fan and to the Star Wars story?
Yeah, I feel like we, the audience, have always seen her public facing leader role, leader identity, right? Of doing and saying what she needs to inspire the rebellion, to keep people fighting, all those things. Her great speech in Rebels is, maybe the most personal thing because it's her escape and all that, but it's still her saying what she needs to from a leadership perspective, which I'm sure we'll get in this. But I'm really curious to see how much of her human story we're going to get of, what motivates her as a person. Is it truly just an unflinching belief in democracy and just true shock of how bad things have gotten? Is there something in her own childhood or family that has inspired her? What made her join the Senate in the first place? All these kind of ideas of like, I don't expect necessarily flashbacks to this was the one moment in her childhood, but just building up the character a little bit more of what is her perspective. Was there a time where she was tempted to say, look, if I just go along with this, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Obviously she's presented throughout the Clone Wars as somebody who is, along with Padme and Bail, trying to make a difference. So what is she going through on a personal level and a human level? That's really exciting and interesting.
Yeah. And for some reason, I don't know. I'm thinking of, this is a weird go with me on this, but I know you like these movies too. And they're in the Daniel Craig Bond films. You got, Judy Dench as M. And there's that one in Casino Royale, I think, where like they wake her up at home and her husband's sleeping and she's got to get on the secured line. I'm always like, what's her life Like, what does she have to sacrifice? What part of her normal life does she to do this job and to be so involved with this and be involved with a bigger fight? And that's a totally different story. But it just made me think of Mothma. Like, what really are we going to get? You know, this young up-and-coming senator gets involved in politics, hangs around with this, you know, Bail Organa and Padme, and things start to change around her. And I like what Genevieve Riley was saying. It just, like, you know, at some point she says later on in the interview, like, at some point, what you're trying to do, even if it's good, it's not working. It hits a dead end. And you got to, you know, now I'm paraphrasing, but just you break it all down and try another way and spend time with Mothma and have that also be a thriller. It's with that line from the trailer. They're watching me. Like, I'm so excited for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a great comparison to M, because I think things like that. Yeah, there's a scene in Quantum of Solace, you know, as well, where she's had been betrayed by a bodyguard in there at his apartment. She's like, I gave these things to him for Christmas.
Yeah.
Those little peeks into, yeah, the strong stoic leader and what is her life really like. But I think I want to get to know her a little bit as a person. But the era that this is set in, is in theory, right? She is in the Senate trying to still do good and help people within a broken system, right? So is she doing little things, right? Is there like, is there going to be the kind of story where there's a planet that clearly needs help? Like there's money needs to go to refugees or whatever. And, you know, there's no way Palpatine's letting that through the broken Senate. So she decides to do something on her own, divert some funds, you know, and it's that, like, a little thing, but it's the little thing that builds the big picture. And it's her taking these risks and her, I think, having to accept, well, for a long time, we've kind of been able to maybe try to keep Palpatine a little bit in check with the machinery of the Senate, but it is really not working at all anymore. And what point does she get the strength to say the Emperor has no clothes, or in this case, the Emperor is an evil wizard?
No, and you're making me think of just like wondering what the specific plot points are, how it all ties up. And I think we got, especially season one, perhaps two kind of stories run alongside each other before, you know, Andor and Mothma are having coffee to discuss rebellions here. But what makes her think, all right, this is getting worse? I think of Bail at the end of Kenobi, the Empire, you know, it's getting more bolder. It's just, you can't ignore it anymore and we can't fight it. So, and yeah, and how that might tie to maybe a tragedy or a massacre or something going on where Andor is and the people of his town, of his village, and all the stuff we've seen so far. Like, yeah, I'm really intrigued by what ties them all together and what finally pushes her to not the breaking point. The breaking point might be Rebel season three for me, the speech that changes it all, but to really push towards that exciting stuff.
Yeah. But I think like internally in this two season show, I wouldn't be surprised to see her realize and accept at some point I have to run, you know, at some point it won't be safe for me to be a part of this anymore, and getting her to that Rebels moment.
Yeah. Building towards it. Indeed. Diego Luna said in response to O'Reilly talking about Mothma's journey, if you hear that, and by the way, this interview is great because they both were just building off each other, and he got the executive producer there as well. But he just says, if you hear that, it's not about what happened, it's about how it happens. And that's an amazing approach to storytelling. And then if you're okay, Joseph, I'm going to read a couple of these quotes here. I try to do my best transcribing an actual just moving, flowing interview and not press statement. But the executive producer, Sanae Wollenberg, said, taking people on a journey starting 5 years before to really in the formative years of the rebellion to find many characters caught up in the events of the time in this moment of Star Wars history. Oh, that gave me nerd chills. And having the chance to really go on the complex and complicated journeys with them, just a really opportunity real opportunity to be daring and brave. So those two quotes right there, Joseph, it goes to something we've talked about, the why, Luna says how, but I think that's kind of, you know, the same kind of approach. We kind of love that stuff and there's great value. And I don't say this to like poke at the bear, the folks who might write off this series of, well, we already know what happens to him. We didn't ask for this. And you get that stuff all the time. It's almost a lather, rinse, repeat kind of commentary on some of these stories. Kenobi faced that too. But this is why, right? The how, the why, and focusing down on the characters. And I love what this Sanae Wollenberg said. It's a big moment in Star Wars history. And that's why I think this show has potential great value.
Yeah, absolutely. I do get the weariness with feeling like, yeah, we can engage in, we know what happens, but we're excited to see the how and the why. But, you know, a lot of Star Wars storytelling by its nature, you know that certain things can't happen to certain characters, or they can't meet certain characters or be on a certain planet at a certain time. And I think what's exciting to me about this story is because they're introducing lots and lots of characters. I mean, what do we truly know about characters? We know that Cassian and Mon Mothma can't die. You know, we know that the rebellion can grow. But with all these new characters that we're meeting in Cassian's life, does Mothma have, you know, a partner of any kind? Yeah. We don't know what happens to those people. So there's that literal visceral. We're going to meet people that I think we will learn to get attached to. They will be intense political spy thriller situations. And I can imagine some like great moments of like, we met this new character and we truly don't know if they're going to be the kind of character that ends up, yo, hey, they were at Endor too. Or if they're going to die 5 years before Rogue One. We really don't know the journeys of a lot of the characters. And I think that's going to make it even more compelling as a spy thriller.
Yeah, no, and you know, there's going to be dots to connect, and you know, the big are they going to retell the Cassian meeting K2 scene from the comic, the one shot comic years ago, or redo it? And dare I say, there's all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think you're right. Just spending time with these characters and adding, I just love. As much as we love studying themes and all that stuff around here, I've always been a fan of just the history. Is it's a living document, and I get to fill in blanks on part on the parts of the story I don't know, and that's where my excitement really goes with stuff like this. There, and I also loved she was the EP was pulling in parts of Tony Gilroy and his approach and everything, and I love that she used that the words complex and complicated, and that really. Just makes a lot of sense for this time where we've already seen a little bit of characters along the way of, the Empire, the trains are running on time, that kind of approach. There's that. Mm-hmm. And then there's Lil Leia alert. Like, I thought the Empire was supposed to help us. And that was a valuable part of her journey and her seeing the galaxy and the truth of it. I think we're going to see a lot of that. And who along the way talking about, how and why. Maybe Mothma is alone on this island. Other than Organa, or maybe there's a new senator that emerged. Maybe we get a younger Noor Jebel who's like, nah, things are great. Senator Pamela, like all those kind of characters, are just like, and not just, and it is, to me, I'll say this, it is simply good and bad, Empire and fighting the Empire. But along the way, those who are fighting the Empire, how they're dealing with that and how they're justifying what they're doing or what they're not doing, I think is part of the complicated journey we're about to get here.
Right. I mean, I think it's just so exciting to think like, yeah, does she have a spouse? Does she have family on Chandrilla who are like, we're in a position to believe the Imperial propaganda, right? The Clone Wars were awful. They're presenting a strong, fist to the galaxy. It's defense and it's keeping everything fine versus seeing the people in Andor's life who are directly suffering from the truth of the Empire. That just makes it fascinating to have like really, really difficult decisions for all these characters. Yeah. Complex and complicated.
Diego Luna added, even though it's called Andor, it's about a revolution. It's an ensemble. It's about a group of people. It's about community. You'll have the chance to meet many characters you do not know and visit places you do not know existed in this galaxy. So, Joseph, often we hear some pushback. Again, here I am, slightly poking bears. I get it. But we hear some pushback on the titles of Star Wars shows and when other characters show up in those stories and serve the story of the main character, the cameo versus just a character in an episode, all those kind of debates, which we get. We understand a lot of the conversations around them. And I'm like you, too. I'm excited for some brand new stuff like Acolyte and I love the High Republic stuff where it's an era I'm not familiar with. But going back to this stuff, how do we like going in knowing that this is an ensemble with one name on the title card? Does it make us feel better and different, good, more excited? Where you go with that?
I am excited to see interviews where they are just saying it, where at least Diego Luna is just saying it, because that is certainly the truth that I felt in the trailer, right? I so loved our experience of being at Star Wars Celebration, but not being able to get in the actual panel, and then everybody in line trying to get in the panel. listening to the Android trailer, just slightly syncopated from one another. So you heard the time grapplers chimes slightly and everybody oohing and aahing over different bits. And I remember that was one of my first emotional reactions. This Android trailer was amazing.
Yeah.
Wasn't a lot of Andor in it. And I'm totally fine with it. I really don't want those kinds of those mindsets of how we're going into the shows to distract from what they are. The farther we get out from Book of Boba Fett, I really feel like for myself, I love the whole thing. I think the two episodes that didn't feature Boba Fett much or at all line up thematically. They're great. I can watch the show in my head and go, it's part of the Mandoverse. But with even more time and distance from it, a part of me feels like maybe it really should have been called, you know, The Mandalorian : Book of Boba Fett. And they really and they should have been saying, like, Din's going to be in there. He'll pop in, because I want to remove obstacles for people enjoying things. There's a part of me there's a part of me that's kind of deeply rigid and kind of feels like we should never know anything. You should just go to watch a TV show blind. A director you like made a movie and go to it and don't ever see a trailer. There's a part of me that, like, I would love if we all received art that way, but we don't. So I feel like as much as they can get ahead of, why was Andor only in this episode for 5 minutes? As much as they can get ahead of that, I am happy for, because I think it will help more people enjoy it. And for myself, I'm excited for an ensemble, because I think that's what's going to give it meaning. Knowing a lot of the people in Andor's life is only going to make Andor's story richer and more powerful. So I'm excited for it, just for myself as a viewer. And then in terms of the how do we communicate to the audience what this is, I'm happy for them to use the word ensemble so people know that is what it is.
Yeah, I think we just kind of reached that point, I guess. I would, you know, I still get in little arguments in bars about those two episodes of Boba Fett do have everything to do with Boba Fett, whether the title of the show says so or not. But I also agree with you. It is just simply me realizing that I love that you just said, remove the obstacles to happiness. Mm-hmm. Take the roadblocks away on the path to joy. So that just isn't part of those lather, rinse, repeat conversations we deal with all these shows where the discourse can drain all of us. It isn't so much about the debating the big ideas, because there's always going to be that. And I'm always open to that, or at least open to hearing it. But I have my thoughts and pretty strong thoughts on what the shows are about. But that's a different kind of conversation versus marketing posters, timing, everything. So gets us all ready for what's coming down our path with 70 plus speaking characters of significance. Great. And I love that it's the star of the show that's going, the character I'm playing, that name's on the marquee. I'm probably going to be in a lot of the photos. It's not just about me. It's maybe him leading most of the story or parts of the story, but very clearly Mon Mothma's going to have a ton to do with this. There's so many characters. And I think it's very important for Diego Luna to say that. Not that I expect him to say that. I think it's gracious. I think it's important that he realizes, hey, not necessarily in terms of marketing, but just like, hey, I was there. I filmed all 12 episodes. I really know what the show's about, and I want you all of you to be excited about the time grappler and me. It's all good. It's all there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other big thing I hear in the ensemble is just quality time with the time grappler, for sure. But I also just like, clearly Diego Luna has clarity and passion on what the show is about. And for him to say this is about Andor's journey to realize he is not alone, he can be part of something bigger, it then also really tracks for him to go, like, not turn around and go, but the show is called Andor and it's about me. Right. It's me alone, right? It's really the way he's discussing the show is reflecting the ideas of the show, it seems like.
Absolutely. And there was one little thing there. I forgot to put it in our notes, Joseph, but there was one, I think it was Genevieve O'Reilly talking about Sonny Wolfenberg, the producer, one day having to run from two sets, one of them being like real tense political conversation and the other being a big battle. And I was like, man, I hope every episode is like that. I'm sure it won't. There's going to be a wonderful pacing of storytelling, but man, that just got me excited. That is truly Star Wars on the playground and Star Wars in the classroom, I guess you could say, where you're studying and learning and seeing how Star Wars affects real life and can inform you. And then there's that, let's all go to the playground and play Star Wars. And I think it's going to have both.
Yeah, and you go to a playground and there's people having intense political discussions right on the monkey bars.
I would love to be in second grade right now. Number one, I'd be younger. Two, I'd love to be, all right, let's go to the Senate chamber. And we're going to act out the Senate chamber debate today, kids, friends, you know.
All right, come on over here to play vote of no confidence.
There you go. So any other big thoughts on this interview or any other quotes? There was a lot. I didn't pull everything from the larger podcast episode, Joseph, but anything that you want to talk about before?
Yeah, no, a couple quick things. I love Diego Luna saying, I just wanted to explore many things that I thought about while I was shooting, that being Rogue One, that a film would never allow you to explore. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, that to me is getting also to the heart of the difference between telling a story in film and telling a story in 12 episodes, 24 by the time of season two. Of television, that there's room to explore more nuances in details of the characters. So I'm excited about that. We also talked about that quote, you'll have the chance to meet many characters you don't know and visit places you don't know existed in the galaxy. That's really fun for me just to think about what are some of the, going to be some of the new entries on StarWars.com data bank. Mm-hmm. And final thing for me, Ken, is I'm very curious if, between both seasons of Andor, the ensemble show, is this going to be the first Star Wars show with no lightsabers? Like, we've certainly got individual episodes of television shows, but, you know, the darksaber ends up being a big part of The Mandalorian. We thought maybe Rogue One would be no lightsaber. Then we got Vader. We thought maybe Solo would be no lightsaber. Then we got Maul. And I'm fine with that. I really like that reality of this. Lightsabers and those who wield them and those who have force powers matter. They can put an outsized impression into the galaxy. They affect and change things. So I'm not necessarily for myself hungering for a Star Wars with no lightsabers, but I'm curious to see how much if there will literally be no lightsabers throughout this, and if there's going to be any sort of awareness of the loss of the Jedi or the perception of them being discussed, that, you know, you can't discuss them in this era. Is there going to be any sort of political whispering about what Palpatine truly is? If anybody has, you know, suspicions or rumors with some of the characters that we're going to meet who are having a hard time and rebelling against the Empire, will the Force as a religion or like a faith play a part in any of the characters' lives? So the whole lightsabers, Force users, the Force as a religion, I'm really curious to see how all that's going to play into Andor and how much.
Yeah. And I'm fascinated with it. And I think it's a safe bet to say no sabers, but you know, Rogue One, you kind of started to hear rumors and stuff of Vader, but this came about, but then you didn't know if any of the other characters would have had one in any way, shape or form. But I personally hope there's none, but I do hope there's references, something like kind of what you're saying of feeling the loss of no Force users, no Jedi, no Force wielders in this galaxy to help. And how there's different views on that. Well, of course, because they screwed us. Oh, of course, this and that. Or, you know, we're missing that light. We're not there. But just to actually see the oppression on the ground, to see it, you know, really what it is like for what the Imperials are doing, you know, planet to planet, community to community. I think it would be effective to feel that loss of the light side in any way, shape, or form. But we'll see. Yeah, but that's a million-dollar question right now.
Yeah, well, I cannot wait for a million-dollar answer.
I wish I could give you one. All right. there you go. Well, Andor is right around the corner. This is certainly not going to be the last time we discuss it. And, you know, we're right there. Season of Andor's coming. I know that I've seen some tweets about the marketing being a little less. I honestly think it's kind of right on schedule and time. We, at the time of this recording, we got San Diego Comic-Con on the way. You could see a little bit of push, whether that Lucasfilm or Disney is going to have a big presence there. I'm pretty sure they don't. I don't have an actual scorecard in front of me. but I think we're getting there. I think they know what they're doing. We're going to, you know, we're looking forward to more content. In fact, even at the time of recording today, we recorded a little bit later than we normally do. There was a TV spot dropping that had 1.5 seconds of new footage of Andor in his beard. So we're getting there, Joseph. We're getting there.
Yeah, very, very soon. Very excited.
Very excited indeed. We're going to take a quick break. Before we do, we are going to do a Force Center Recommends, an audio book we think you should try out on us. Joseph, dealer's choice on what you want to recommend.
I think, you know, sometimes we recommend a book in the build-up to us doing a review, and then we just let it go for a while, and I don't want to. The book we discussed recently, Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher, it is a really big Star Wars book. It's Luke and Lando. It is young Rey. There's a lot of really great, really interesting stuff going on that really ties together some of the ideas across Star Wars, but in particular, bridging the gaps of the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy. So I want to continue recommending that one, Shadow of the Sith.
Great choice indeed. Great choice indeed. We appreciate Adam Christopher listening to our review and referencing our David Bowie jokes on the deep dive there. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. After this, a quick break. We'll come back with more news here on ForceCenter.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the Super Star Destroyer of our flag. I'm going to come up with a new catchphrase. It'll just hit me. It'll get there. We are looking at Star Wars news, and we mentioned the Book of Boba Fett earlier, but we want to talk about the Book of Boba Fett and Star Wars Vision, specifically the short The Duel, both being nominated for Emmys. Yes, Star Wars will be present at the 74th annual Primetime Emmys, thanks to the nominations received by The Book of Boba Fett and Star Wars Visions the Duel. The Book of Boba Fett was nominated for Outstanding Special Effects in a Season or Movie, Outstanding Sound Editing for a Comedy or Drama Series, and Outstanding Fantasy / Sci-Fi Costumes. Star Wars Visions Short the Duel was nominated for Outstanding Short Form Animated Program. You know, Star Wars and awards have, you know, an interesting relationship. They've always been present. Sometimes they don't get acknowledged, especially the movies, as much as maybe we'd like. A lot of the special effects stuff and the post-production teams, they get nominated or recognized. But it's always nice that Star Wars gets some kind of recognition, Joseph. So thoughts on these award nominations?
Yeah, no, I'm always happy for them. And it is always a back and forth battle. You know, in some ways it is. Star Wars was this great tapping into big myths and all that. But it was also George Lucas updating B-movie serials.
Yeah.
And some of that just cultural battle with is it to be awarded? That stuff is always going to go on. So it's always great to see any of the great talent going into Star Wars being rewarded. These particular nominations, particularly the episodes, were really interesting to me. I was really excited about the sound editing award, specifically from Chapter 6 of Book of Boba Fett, one of my very favorites, From the Desert Comes a Stranger. Yeah. And that just made me think, like, oh, Cad Bane's blaster sound finally getting some nods. All the sound, you know, editing design of all of those great meditation and training scenes with Luke and Grogu on the planet we now know as Ossus. I just really thought about those from that specific episode that's being nominated, and it made me excited that that would be rewarded. And also the visual effects, right? We've been talking a lot about that with some people being concerned about the Obi-Wan Kenobi effects not being, you know, necessarily up to par. I thought the effects in Book of Boba Fett, you know, as soon as I saw a visual effects award, I was like, yeah, he rode a Rancor and it was great. Yeah. And it worked for me. And I believed Boba Fett was riding a Rancor. So I'm glad that that is being nominated.
I'm with you on that. No, I think Book of Boba Fett had some real wonderful stuff in it, the way it looked and everything. And as someone who often brings up the volume and thoughts on it, I will have to cop to really enjoying a lot of the big ideas that were had and how they were executed in the Book of Boba Fett. So it's exciting to see Star Wars nominated on any level. I love the nomination of the Duel, only because it just, you know, continues to shine a light on an interesting, and I think at times I would describe it as an important project, Star Wars Visions, and looking forward to more of that. And that was the Duel specifically, was a beautiful piece of storytelling. So I love seeing it get that nomination as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It is just a beautiful short all by itself, which I think is the great design of that, and the color scheme and everything is great in the Duel. So very excited for that.
But let's focus on costumes. You know, with all this talk about effects and the volume, of which, again I admit to being a large part of that conversation, good or bad, I think we can overlook the glory of Star Wars costumes sometimes. And so to see that it got nominated for Outstanding Fantasy Sci-Fi Costumes, I love that. I love that. Did you have any favorite Book of Boba Fett costumes? And I'm trying to think, you and I got to go watch that, walk through that Mandalorian experience, which included Book of Boba Fett at the celebration and all the pictures we took there. But yeah, anything stand out to you?
Yeah, I think the nomination was specifically for the first episode of Book of Boba Fett. Yes. So when I saw the nomination, I was like, which episode? Because I feel the costume designer should get 18,000 awards for the Tuskens in particular. Yeah. I think the warrior in particular is just an amazing, great costume. But to take the visual, the costumes of the Tusken Raiders, and to give them different variety, stay in the tradition, but give this entire group of the Tuskens their own identity. And then within the tribe, give the individuals identity that befit their station. And one of the things that I went on and on about with Book of Boba Fett of really enjoying how, especially in those early episodes, Boba Fett could see the different times of his life and possibilities of his identity reflected in the Tuskens. So to see the way the leader, the warrior, the child were garbed and have that give so much meaning and identity for those individual characters, but then also how Boba Fett saw him. I just kind of can't say enough about how much I love the Tuskens costumes. And so that's that, you know, that's a part of what the nomination is for, since it's for that first episode. But also to answer your question in general across the whole series, Cobb Vanth, talk about just Star Wars simplicity, right? Yeah, this is back to, do you know who Han Solo is? Yes, he wears a white shirt and a black vest. That is Han Solo. And it is cool, you know, and he has stripes on his black pants. Like, it's so simple that a child could describe it to an adult who doesn't want to hear any more about Star Wars. And Cobb Vanth has that, like, classic, like, he has a red shirt.
A scarf.
He has a handkerchief, and it is at this angle. But then, you know, the armor, the flare of orange on Fennec Shand's armor, just kind of endless cool looks that are of the Star Wars tradition, but particularly in this Mandoverse, really fit into the Mandoverse, too. So I just think it's awesome that this costume designer is being celebrated.
Yeah, let me insert controversial reference to the mods right here. They were totally different than I'm not talking about the speeders. Talk about them themselves. I like the look, and it was a different generation and all that. And you're right to point out, this was specifically for episode one, even though this will, you know, get celebrated as the entire show. I thought it was about episode one and Boba Fett's jumpsuit, that it was just like, look at that. It was just a jumpsuit, but no, you're so right. I mean, the choices behind the Tuskens were just home runs every time out, and what they were trying to do and what they wanted to do, and taking a piece of Star Wars lore that's been around since 1977 and really just not just expanding in terms of story, but in terms of look and building upon it and giving them their own identity. It was without a doubt valuable to what they were doing with that stuff. And so it makes a lot of sense. As far as overall stuff, I mean, you got a lot of armor, you're out in the desert, you're fighting Tatooine sand monsters and all these kind of wonderful things. I want to continue to shout out one of my favorite characters, Garsif Whip, who just absolutely brought elegance to the desert, you know, and the gowns, and seeing those gowns in person at the Mandalorian display. And you and I were talking about all the outfits, all the costumes, but especially around those gowns, of people taking real close up pictures of the fabrics and the designs and everything, so they could help in their amazing cosplay, cosplay efforts. Garsif Whip just continues to stand out for a lot of reasons. And I think one of the reasons is her elegance in this brutal world and what she represents and what she, the potential of the character, that might've been lost a little with her death, that I get, but she is there and there to be celebrated. So that's part of my favorite costumes in Star Wars.
Absolutely. And I think it's great to point out Garsif Whip, because there is this thing in Star Wars where sometimes the characters are like cartoon characters, and like you don't own anything that isn't that jacket and those pants. And I assume you change the shirt sometimes, Han Solo, but that's what you wear, period. and then you have characters like Garsif Whip, who's like, I have a different dress every time I appear, which I think I registered, but it really hit me hard when we saw all of her gowns at that great exhibit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff. And a lot of great designs, even some comical ones with the major domo to the mayor, all that kind of stuff. Just really good Star Wars stuff. So we wanted to take a moment to congratulate everyone involved on these teams who got nominated for both the Book of Boba Fett and the duel from Star Wars Visions. There you go. Any final thoughts on that, Joseph?
No, I just hope that we get to have a news section where we're talking about the nominations that were won by Book of Boba Fett and the duel.
Yes, and we'll keep you updated, of course, if that happens. I don't know if anyone watches the annual Primetime Emmy Awards anymore, but we'll see. We'll see. back in the day, there was appointment television for a young film student like myself, a film for Emmys and Oscars, studying it all. That is our look at Star Wars news this week. As I said up top, as always, there's a lot of fun stories out there, things that we'll talk about when they become more official. So stay tuned here. Before we leave, we want to talk about this week in Star Wars history, looking ahead to Star Wars past. And on July 21st, 1978, Star Wars was re-released for the first time, and a line of dialogue was added, making this one of the first special editions. I am poking bears today. C-3PO's line, the tractor beam is coupled to the main reactor in 7 locations. A power loss at one of the terminals will allow the ship to leave. The line was in the original script that had been omitted from the original film. So, Joseph, Star Wars and Star Wars fans' relationship to film changes is well documented. So we're certainly not here to spark that debate. Maybe just poke that bear a little bit like I've been doing all day. But do you remember the first time you realized George had been changing these things for a long time? And did that affect your relationship with the special editions? Or maybe it didn't at all?
I don't remember like the specific moment of the dime dropping, but I think the first thing I was aware of is learning that the film hadn't always been called A New Hope. Right. You know, knowing Star Wars, came out as Star Wars, and then in, I believe, the 1981 re-release, after Empire Strikes Back had come out, that the chapter for A New Hope was added. I think that I can't remember like where I first heard that, but I had the VHS tapes, and then later I got the that DVD set that had both the special editions. This is around 2006, and then also had a bonus disc that was the original releases. And that bonus disc of Star Wars is just Star Wars with no A New Hope. Whenever I first learned that, hey, it wasn't always A New Hope. It was in a time before the internet where it was just somebody's older cousin claims. And you're like, wow, is that true? Cool. So it's more in the time of myth that I learned that. And I think, for how it impacted the special editions, I think for me going into the special editions, nobody was angry in my social group that I remembered. I think, in fact, I remember people talking about like, the Star Wars movies are so awesome, but the effects are a little dated. You can kind of see the box around the TIE fighters, talking about shots that maybe that shot could look better. And wow, there's going to be new footage. Or have you heard they're adding back stuff with Biggs like from the book? And like, there was nothing but excitement about the changes to the special edition beforehand. And so I wonder if the controversy is the idea of you shouldn't change anything at all versus I don't like the change that you made.
That's an amazing point. I've same for my social circles, and I don't know if anyone out there experienced something differently. Maybe I'm sure there probably are some people going, they're making changes. But the anticipation for the special editions and all new footage and see it again for the first time, I mean, gosh, it was through the roof. And yes, it was after when I think we were challenged. And yes, there's some changes I still don't like, and some I love and accept more than the originals. All those kind of discussions can always be had. It is the Han shot first of it all. But there was, because of the fallout of Han shot first and other things, and still running into people now who just don't want to acknowledge the special editions at all, which is their right. And you'll have that option if you have, like me, staring at both VHS versions right now on my shelf. I can choose. It's okay. But the New Hope, I'm glad you brought up the New Hope thing. It's a weird, I don't know, almost demarcation in the sand there, line in the sand of those who are like, it's still Star Wars to me. I don't acknowledge New Hope. Like, well, why? Why not? Lucas and others felt it was appropriate to change that and add that. Because the story was continuing, and it makes a lot of sense. So I understand just out of habit's sake, that's why I still say AT-AT, and you can't take that away from me, but I also acknowledge AT-AT is just fine. That's a fun debate. But you know what I mean? Where it's like, it is part of that relationship, that weird, like, not my Star Wars vibe that can sometimes happen. Again, not all the changes are great, but then I hear a story like this, going back to the original day in history, and it's like, is there someone going, nope, I only watch the May 77 to July 78 Star Wars. That's the only Star Wars I watch.
I don't need to be talked down to by C-3PO about how many different locations is this coupled to the main reactor. I can count. I can look at the screen. I can figure it out. And I think the A New Hope thing is just so fascinating to me because I just grew up the movies were Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi.
Same.
But then probably VHS is like A New Hope. And then things started to be calling it A New Hope. And it's like, I assumed it was always there and I missed it as a, tiny child, and all those different kind of memory hole things that can happen. I think for me, just this great history bit that you pulled up of the very first special edition on July 21st, 1978. I think my main reaction is just there are different filmmakers. There are filmmakers who lock things and there are filmmakers who want to tinker and tinker and tinker. And Lucas it would probably still be tinkering if he still owned the films, right?
Yeah.
And I think I'm just kind of like, I'm totally okay with that. I feel like filmmakers, it is yours, change it all you want. But I would also like access to the historical document. You know, to me, it is a best of, it would be best to have both, right? To say, this is my version. This is the version. But also, you know, if you want to see for history's sake, the thing that was made in this moment and is frozen in time, you can have access to that too. I think that's where I ultimately come down on it.
Yeah. And I'm with you on that too. I like kind of seeing it. To me, it's sometimes amusing. And I think, you know, this is an official This Day in History from StarWars.com that I pulled this from, but we can't even forget, we shouldn't forget that Chris Taylor in his book, How Star Wars Conquered the Galaxy, talks about how opening weekend George changed some audio because he didn't like the sound in the theater or something sparked. Like, the details now escape me because it's been a few years since I read the book.
Yeah.
And that even then kind of made me think of like, well, so it wasn't 1997 that he just decided to make changes. So
no.
Just,
and there's a whole thing about adding more clarifying shots to the end of Empire Strikes Back because there was confusion about which ship Luke and Leia were on, that they shipping out new things. I remember in 2002, I tried to Google this to make sure I had it right, some of it, this is from my memory, that like if you were seeing a digital projection of Attack of the Clones, there were some last minute changes of like seeing Anakin's mechno arm hand that weren't in the printed film versions of Attack of the Clones because Lucas couldn't get him changed fast enough. Like, so obviously that's after special edition, but just like this has always been a thing, right?
Yeah. Better or worse, it's always the thing. But fascinating stuff. Looking back, July 21st, 1978, where were you? I was 1.5 goo-goo and gogging my way through the world. there you go, my friends. That is our look at news and Star Wars history this week. We are the Force Center Pod. We can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. We will have a live Q&A show. We are looking at Friday, July 29th, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll update you on that if that changes. But we're going to get through this Comic-Con travel, come back and talk some Star Wars with all of you here. So subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. We can be found on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. If you're on Apple Podcasts, hey, give us a rating and give us a review if you want. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter, patreon.com/ForceCenters, where you can support us. And from there, you can get into our Discord server. We're going to have a conversation with ForceCenter friends every day. As for me, you can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. The off chance you're listening to this before July 21st, just a couple days away, we'll be doing the Mark Ellison Friends comedy show at the American Comedy Company. And then a big show in Burbank on July 30th at Flappers with Jake Lewis and his gang of comics. So I'll be there as well. For charity things to focus on, once again, want to highlight the Trevor Project, which is an American nonprofit organization that focuses on suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning youth. They have a toll-free telephone number. It operates as what they call the Trevor Lifeline, a confidential service that offers trained counselors and a lot more. You can support by going to thetrevorproject.org. Joseph, what about you, sir?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm sure I will continue to post about some of the action figures I discovered that I own and some of the new ones I'm buying. I got some exciting things to share. You can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for links to all of my other comedy adventures, past and present and future. I will be at the Great Convention in Minneapolis, Convergence, in August. I'm doing a brand new stand-up show called Joseph Scrimshaw versus Emotion. So if you're going to be at Convergence, come see the show and say hello. And that is it for me, Ken. But oh, I also do want to continue to promote Vote Forward. It is an organization where you can write letters to other voters, encouraging them to use their power. And I think it is really important that we all use the power that we have to try to make the world be the way that we would like it to be through the system that we have. So that's votefwd.org.
I think Mon Mothma would agree and say we could continue to look for ways beyond it as well. But it starts there. So great stuff as always. And I'm always a big fan of your stand-up show titles. Joseph Scrimshaw versus Time was one of my favorites. No Fear, No Emotions. That's great. Check that all out. Thank you all for listening. So for Jennifer on vacation, having a great time. For Joseph, for me. And Diego Luna. As a casting editor, this one's for you as well, my friend. We'll see y'all. This was Force Center.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.